Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the presentation of Umicore's trading update for the first quarter. Revenues in the first quarter of 2013 were down 2% year-on-year, and to put this performance in context, we should bear in mind that the revenues were relatively strong in the first quarter of 2012, continuing at the time the trend that we had observed in the record year of 2011. It is actually in the second quarter of last year, as you will probably recall, that we started to feel the effects of the economic slowdown, and these effects became more pronounced in the second half of last year. Overall, the demand levels in the first quarter of this year were broadly in line with the patterns that we had observed in the second part of last year. We should also bear in mind that Europe accounts for about half of Umicore sales, so the recession, the economic recession that persists in the region is clearly weighing both on revenue and margin developments. Lower demand in Europe in volume terms is offset to a large extent by the growth of our activities in other regions. However, the margin picture is quite different. Europe is a premium market in several of our segments, and the margin levels that we achieve in this region in Europe cannot easily be matched in other regions. Lower levels of industrial activity in Europe were mostly visible in the automotive and construction sectors. Against this economic backdrop, we will of course continue to adjust our cost base as we have done for the past few years. And we will also look to restore margins by increasing prices and ensure that we continue to receive the value that the technical performance of our products and services deserves. Despite the downturn, we continue to generate highly positive cash flows, which enable us to pursue our growth ambitions and at the same time pay out a stable dividend to the shareholders. I do not see today signs of a near-term economic recovery or improvement in market conditions, and as I mentioned in February, full-year earnings should be below or will be below those of 2012. Currently, we expect full-year recurring EBIT for the group to be between 300 and 330 million euro. This forecast also incorporates higher depreciation charges following the high investment levels of last year. Let me now comment on the main developments in each business group, starting with catalysis. Revenues in automotive catalysts were stable year-on-year and developed broadly in line with the market, both globally and regionally. The global picture masks significant disparities in terms of regional and product mix, however. In Europe, the trend observed in the second half of last year continued, and car production in the first quarter of this year declined by 9% compared to the first quarter of last year. In addition, we saw a further decrease of diesel engines in the vehicle mix, and as you know, diesel cars require more complex catalyst systems, so this development is affecting margins. In North America, car production was stable, and so were our sales volumes, although there was a shift to somewhat smaller vehicles. In Asia, we saw car production decrease by some 3% in Korea and by 16% in Japan. However, the decrease was more than offset by the growth in China, where car production grew 12% year-on-year. And in China, we saw global brands gaining ground as the demand for larger, high-end vehicles showed particular strength. And we did benefit from our large market position in China and our exposure to global brands, and as a result, our revenues in the region grew faster than the market overall. In precious metals chemistry, the revenues were also stable, reflecting a stable demand of AutoCAD precursors, while the growing sales of APIs were offset by lower demand for precious metals compounds used in electronics and life science applications. In energy materials, revenues were up 3%, driven mostly by the continued growth of rechargeable battery materials and by higher demand for nickel-based compounds produced by the Cobalt and Specialty Materials business unit. The performance of rechargeable battery materials was driven to a large extent by the strong demand for high energy density cathodes that are used in high-end portable electronics like smartphones and tablets. Also, after a period of retreat and inventory reductions by our customers, demand for NMC materials used in hybrid and electrical vehicle applications started to grow again. Umicore materials are qualified today on 15 platforms already, and there are still a number of qualification programs that are ongoing. The other positive news is that NMCs are clearly taking the lion's share of the programs that are due to be launched over the next 5 to 6 years. The development in electro-optic materials was less positive, with lower demand for both infrared optics and substrates weighing on the performance of the business group. The lower demand for substrates is a factor of the very low activity levels in the concentrator PV industry. In thin film products, we saw higher demand for rotary ITO targets, driven by the success of touch panels, and the investments in new coating capacity by our customers, which were postponed a year ago, are now again on the agenda, and most of them should use rotary targets, which bodes well for future business. Performance Materials is the business group that was most affected by the economic downturn, given its exposure to the European economy in general and the construction sector in particular. Revenues were down year-on-year in building products, in technical materials, and in element 6 abrasives. In building products, demand was also affected by the harsh winter conditions, which prevailed throughout the first quarter in our main markets of Europe. In recycling, revenues were down 4% year-on-year due to lower sales in jewelry and industrial metals and in precious metals management. There was indeed lower demand for silver-based products that are used in photovoltaics and other industrial and decorative applications. The silver recycling activities in Thailand grew further, which helped offset a relatively weaker availability of silver and gold residues in Europe. In precious metals refining, supply conditions and revenues were stable. The availability of industrial byproducts remained excellent, while the supply of spent automotive catalysts decreased somewhat further. Metal prices were much lower than in the first quarter of last year. Fortunately, we had secured part of the price exposure to precious metals in the past and at higher prices, which obviously mitigates the impact of lower spot prices. A certain number of metals, however, such as rhodium, selenium, tellurium, or ruthenium, cannot be hedged, as you know, and their lower prices did affect the margin. As I mentioned earlier, we are pursuing our long-term growth investments. In catalysis, we are commissioning the HDD line in France to serve the Euro 6 contracts that were recently won, and are building new lines for catalysts for light-duty vehicles in Germany in the run-up to Euro 6. We have also started the construction of the HDD plant in China, and the construction of new tech centers is making good progress. In Brazil, it is almost completed, and in Japan, it should be done by the end of this year. The new precious metals chemistry plant in the U.S. should also be commissioned towards the end of this year. In energy materials, the bulk of investments go to rechargeable battery materials, with ongoing investments to expand cathode production capacity in both Korea and China. And the new precursor plant in Korea is on target to come on stream in the first part of next year. In performance materials, we have two major projects ongoing: the construction of a new surface treatment facility for building materials in Vivier in France, and a new plant for zinc chemicals in China. In the recycling business group, we have now launched the second phase of expansion and modernization of the sampling facility in Hoboken, and we continue to work on the debottlenecking of the plant. We have also completed the expansion and upgrade of the silver recycling facility of jewelry and industrial metals in Thailand, and have started the expansion project in Germany. The list of ongoing investments shows how we continue to position the company to capture attractive growth opportunities. At the same time, we are committed to striking a good balance between long-term growth on one side and short-term profitability on the other side, which, considering the current economic headwinds, will require further adjustments to the cost base and to pricing. With this, I would like to now open the floor to questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1. We will now take our first question from Mark Dubrower from Petercam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Mark. Two small questions, if I may. First of all, the revenues were stable in Catalysis. What would have been the trend without the integration, first time year on year, of the JV with Shokubai? Would have been around minus 4%. In Recycling, did you take the opportunity of higher prices in platinum palladium prices in the first 2 months to extend hedging on 2013? What about the present scope of hedging on 2014? And finally, why quasi negating the fact that the main platinoids at higher spot prices in Q1 on average? Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mark. Let me start with the question on hedging. Yes, we did take advantage of relatively high spot prices and forward prices of PGMs and other precious metals in the first few months of this year to extend the hedging and to extend it into 2014 to a certain degree, indeed. So that's the situation. Then the impact of metal prices in the first part of the year of the high spot prices was, in the first 2 months was relatively modest in a way because of the existing hedges that were put in place a while ago. So I would say the main effect that we saw in the first part of this year was the continuing slide of the secondary metal prices, those that cannot be hedged in a way.
Yes, but does that mean that the relative importance of hedging was it was a majority of volumes that was hedged for platinoids?
Suffice to say that the main effects that, as I mentioned in my comments, in my presentation, the main effects were due to the metal prices that cannot be hedged in
okay.
a way.
Thank you.
And in a way, the differences between if you look at the overall basket of precious metals, the differences between the prices, the high levels that we've seen in the course of the first quarter and the prices that we saw in the course of last year were not so striking. Now let me go to the first question that you raised about catalysts. The underlying evolution of revenues was stable in a way, as we had a small impact from the first-time consolidation of our majority share in the Japanese joint venture. Let's bear in mind that the joint venture has a global scope and has facilities and entities all over the world, and it is only the Japanese entity that was not consolidated in the past. So there was a slight positive impact from the first-time consolidation of that entity. and this was to a large extent offset by the fact that we had lower pass-through costs in catalysis in the first quarter of this year compared to the first quarter of last year. Pass-through costs referring to costs such as substrates and rare earths. So overall, it was a wash, and again, the underlying evolution was stable.
Okay, thank you. But does that mean that the former ICT USA was already integrated last year in Q1?
USA was extremely small.
Okay, thank you very much.
If I look at those entities that have a meaningful impact, that was Japan, which was not consolidated,
yes,
and the other regions were already consolidated.
Okay. Would you put a figure on the...
We need to address the other questions as well.
Okay.
So I would suggest that you put yourself back in the queue if you have follow-on questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Tony Jones from Redburn Partners. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning, Mark. I've got three questions. Firstly, with the weaker customer activity and the mix issues, this has been a feature of the last few trading periods. So is it now time to be reviewing the business portfolio, especially performance materials, where it still looks like it's furthest below expectations? Secondly, can you help us understand the comment on cash flow? Is that simply just net working capital inflow because of lower volume? And then finally, on the decision to buy back stock, is this a sign that although trading is still a big challenge, is it that you feel it's not really getting materially worse, or is it just that you believe that the share price doesn't account for your future opportunities? Thank you.
Good morning, Tony. Let me start with a question regarding the portfolio. The first thing we need to do, as I mentioned in the presentation, is continue to adjust the cost base on one side and work on pricing in order to restore margins. Changes in the portfolio, taking into account the weakness in the European market, are not easy to manage in a way because, as I mentioned also, we have to bear in mind that in many of our end markets and applications, Europe is a premium market. So it's not by displacing activities and trying to grow faster in other regions, which we are trying to do to rebalance the portfolio in terms of growth to a certain extent. It is not by doing so in an accelerated manner that you would achieve higher levels of profitability. I think it's important to bear in mind, indeed, that Europe is a premium market. So there is no easy way to deal with that, and that's why we have to continue to selectively adjust footprint, adjust the cost base, and work on pricing. In terms of working capital, no, I wouldn't say that the reduction of cash flow is mostly an effect of lower demand, because typically the effect of lower revenues on working capital would work through the receivables, and there is a certain time lag due to the payment terms. So this is not a major feature of the positive cash flows. The fact is that our activities remain highly cash positive, despite the high investment level. So I think that's simply a good sign. And also, let's bear in mind that our EBITDA development is somewhat more favorable than the EBIT development, in a way. And then on the buyback, we explained back in February why we wanted to resume. We are going to resume the share buyback. So there is nothing changed compared to the comments that were made at the time, and we have sufficient cash flows to pursue our investments pay a stable dividend, to buy back the shares, and to maintain a very sound balance sheet structure that enables us to also take advantage of opportunities, of M&A opportunities, if one of these would arise.
Thanks, Mark.
So there is, not, there is, I would say, nothing else to be read between the lines.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Wim Hoste from KBC Securities.
Yes, good morning, Wim Hoste. Two questions, please. First, on the battery recycling units. You mentioned in the press release that further modifications will be made to the smelter in the coming months. Can you maybe elaborate? Is this with regards to the test results achieved so far that have you that made you inspired to make some changes or so? And can you maybe overall comment on your growth ambitions in the recycling division? And then secondly, on catalysis, can you remind us when we should expect some pickup of volumes related to Euro 6 regulation? Thank you.
Good morning, Wim. It's the result of the test campaigns that has led to the conclusion that some further modification had to be done to the configuration of our pilot smelter. We have made modifications all along the test campaigns, and we are pursuing that that trajectory of adjusting the configuration and to improve the process, to fine tune the process, and to address the technical conclusions that were drawn from the piloting campaigns. The ambitions in the growth ambitions in recycling remain the same. We want to be in a position use our technological capabilities to address new opportunities, whether it's new segments or new supply streams or different blends, or improving the performance of the existing or the capacity of the existing facilities. So it's going to be a combination of a number of factors, and in the short term, short to mid-term, the most visible effect of that will be through the debottlenecking of the existing facilities. And I insist it's on the plural, it's not just the Hoboken facility. We also are expanding our recycling capacity in Thailand. We're doing the same in Germany for the jewelry and industrial metals activities. As you know, there is a vast debottlenecking program addressing the capacity in Hoboken itself, and next to that, we're working on new technology developments to possibly address new supply streams. So that is still in process and a subject of high attention and high level of engineering efforts. The impact of Euro 6. Moving now to your second question. Will be visible mostly starting next year in 2014 when Euro 6 kicks in, and there is very little effect to be expected this year. There is some ramp-up activities and pre-production activities taking place next year, but in most cases, start of production on the Euro 6 contracts will be in the course of 2014, both for heavy and light-duty applications.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Rakesh Patel from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Just a couple of questions, if I may. First of all, I just wondered if you could quantify for us the impact of the maintenance that you were planning this year. I think you had two that were evenly spread out over the year, if I remember rightly. And then secondly, if you could talk a little bit more about the cost management in terms of how much cost do you think that can be taken out of the business on a recurring basis and how we should look at that going forward. And then finally, I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the visibility now that you have in the business. I think in the past you've talked about recycling being around 6 months and catalysis being about 3 months or so. I wondered if this has really changed to any significant degree. Thanks very much.
Hi, Rakesh. Unfortunately, as you would expect, I'm not willing to go into details and quantify the impact of our maintenance shutdowns in recycling. And I've not commented on those in the past and will not do that now. So let me move to the other questions. Cost management, there again, I'm not going to quantify how much cost we can take out of the cost base. Suffice to say that in the current economic context and with little, if any, improvement in sight in the economic backdrop, we need to take more cost out of the cost base. I think that's the only conclusion that can be reached today, and there is a need indeed to address the effects of the downturns or to mitigate the effects of the downturn through margin improvements, through cost reductions and pricing increase. How much is going to come from cost reductions and how much from price is difficult to say at this stage, and let us work on that a bit more. In any case, all measures that are in the pipeline are reflected in the forecast that we have communicated, if they have an effect in 2013, of course. In terms of visibility, there is no change compared to the statements that were previously made, and we still have reasonable visibility of about 6 months in recycling activities, given the mix of contracts that we have and the supplies that are on site or in transit already. And in automotive catalysts, the same, we have the same visibility as in the past is what we have today, indeed, of about 2 to 3 months, which is based on the call-offs from the car manufacturers. And beyond 2 to 3 months, we have to work with their production plans and forecasts, which do get regularly updated. So visibility has not changed. It's not great. It's not a disaster in a way. And let's put it this way: at this point in time, there are still quite a number of moving parts.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Philippe de Pau from ING. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Mark. Philippe de Pau from ING. I have only one question left, and that is on your sentence in the press release that in order to mitigate the difficult trading conditions, you will try to increase prices. And that doesn't seem obvious in the current market conditions. So I was wondering if you could elaborate a bit more on what, in which markets, which products you think you're able to increase prices. That's the question.
Hi, Philippe. You're right in saying that it's not an easy proposition and it's not an obvious way forward. However, it's necessary to do that in those areas where we have a technical differentiation which justifies a premium. In those areas where we command a premium, we need to make sure we extract the full premium, the full value from the market. And you know that our business model is a business model where we offer a total system cost value proposition to our customers, whether it's in catalysis, in battery materials, etc. And we need to make sure that this is properly done and that our prices do reflect the technical performance and the functionalities that that we offer. In most cases, the most significant value to our customers comes from the metal savings that we are able to offer, and I think it's important to get properly paid for that. It's not going to be easy, but it's necessary, and if we are to continue to invest massively in research and development efforts, we need to make sure that we get the full fruits from these initiatives.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm not going to go into more specifics about which businesses, the message internally to all the teams have to manage pricing and extract maximum value from prices, and at the same time work on cost. So there isn't a very differentiated message, but of course it is easier to implement in those areas where we have sufficient technical differentiation. That's what I meant.
Yeah, but I was actually also thinking about the rechargeable battery materials, where you said before that you had to work together with the OEMs to actually lower the cost and also lower the price to make the hybrid cars more affordable. It was just a question, but I understand that you can't give clarity on what individual products you're talking about. So I appreciate your more general comment.
No, but this is a good example that you bring forward, because in a way, in the breakthrough in hybrid and electric vehicles, plug-in and full electric vehicles, is not going to come from our prices. It's going to come from the total system cost, and that's the point I specifically wanted to make, is that it's by research and development that we can come up with new material compositions that actually do offer higher energy density and reduce thereby significantly the total cost of the battery for the customer. And it's not by squeezing or price and or value added in the equation that these objectives can be reached. So that's why the distinction has to be made between our price and the value proposition in terms of total cost that we make to the customer.
Very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Dominic Frauendienst from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks very much. I've got two questions. One is on the EBIT and the guidance and the drivers behind that. So essentially you're guiding, if I take the midpoint of the guidance, for about 15% lower EBIT this year. And I was just wondering if you could elaborate on the drivers behind this. What's the impact from the investments and the costs related to that, from the higher D&A charges, and then the general lower demand? Some more clarity and would be helpful. And secondly, in the recycling business, I noticed that you commented on the e-scrap supplies stream, and you said that fees have come under pressure due to increased competition. I was just wondering if you could shed more light on this. Where is this competition coming from? How severe is it? Is it a structural issue or just a temporary issue? And how much of your recycling actually depends on high-end e-scrap? Thanks.
Let me start with the second question, Dominic. We are not dependent on any single supply segment in if you look at the mid to long term picture in recycling, we're not dependent on any single segment, because we have the flexibility to move from one segment to the other and adjust the mix of products. The situation in e-scrap is the following, and that's no change compared to the comments that were made earlier, is that the high end segment, which is the one in terms of scrap. I know it's somewhat a bit paradox to talk about the high-end scrap, but that indeed exists. The high-end segment that we're mostly interested in is not growing very fast. There is a significant growth in the overall electronic scrap market, but not so much, or not so fast. The growth is not so fast in the segment that is of most interest to us, and that is why we see some pressure from competition and increased capacity coming on stream in that respect. The competition for high-end scrap is mostly coming from the true recyclers, Most of them would be in Europe. I mean, the usual suspects. We have some competition in Japan as well. And while in the low end segments, competition would mostly come from the informal sectors and backyard processing in a number of countries. In a way, you know, our approach to the business is to promote maximum flexibility so that we can optimize the mix. In the short term, though, indeed, we saw some pressure on these prices.
Do you expect this to be structural or just a temporary issue?
I mean, it's difficult to say because I cannot predict with a high degree of precision how the supply availability will develop in a way, because that depends to a large extent on the effectiveness of the collection mechanisms, not on the effectiveness of the recycling companies. So it is a bit hard to predict in a way. And again, in the long run, I'm not so much concerned about that because we have the flexibility to optimize or mix anyways. In terms of the EBIT development, I would say that about 10 million euro would come from addition of the decrease would come from additional depreciation charges, calculating the effects of the high investments that were made last year. So that would explain about 10 million. The rest is a combination of the margins and mix effects.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Simon Fickling from Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking these questions. I've got three. firstly, you're talking about the cost cutting and price increases that you're going to try and push through. Can you tell us, have any new incentivization schemes been offered to heads of divisions to try and drive these through? I'm talking sort of below the senior management level, the sort of operational heads, if any new schemes are in place there. Secondly, on HDD, on orders, if there's been any material orders, if momentum there has changed significantly since the full year update. And thirdly, with the new CapEx announced today, if there's any change to the full year 13 guidance, which I think at full year you gave us being at the same level or slightly higher than last year. Thanks.
Hi, Simon. Let me start with the incentivization. No, there is no new scheme that's been implemented or introduced for management at any level. Our schemes are based on return on capital employed, and that fits perfectly the purpose today and will continue also to fit the purpose in the longer term because this is what we want to achieve. We want to achieve profitable growth and sustainable growth, and in order to do that, we need to have high returns on capital employed. I mean, this is how we manage to run the company with good balance between returns to the shareholders on one side, high investment levels to pursue growth opportunities and high research efforts. You can only do that in the long run, I would say, in a way, almost regardless of the economic cycles, if you have high ROCE. So our management population is incentivized on ROCE, and I think that is addressing all the levers that have to be pulled, whether it's cost, whether it's pricing, whether it's working capital management. This is a measure that incorporates well all the dimensions that we want operational management to dedicate attention to. In terms of HDD, there isn't any material change that has occurred between the February call and today, and the focus is on bringing the production capacity online in time to execute the orders that we have gained in recent times, be it in Europe or in Asia or in other regions. That's the focus, and that is unchanged in a way. And while there is no new material order that has recently been received, we have material orders in the books that have been gained in the past a couple of years and that we need to address. In terms of CapEx, there is no need to change the guidance at this point in time. There is, as always, some fine-tuning in the CapEx programs in function of the market developments. This being said, the bulk of our CapEx goes to longer-term growth initiatives that are, by and large, unaffected by the shorter-term economic headwinds. So the guidance remains, by and large, the same.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Dennis Lapidotto from Kempen. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I still have a few questions connected to the recycling division. First of all, I was wondering how are you looking at H2 versus H1? Of course, besides the additional shutdown at the Hoboken facility, how are you looking at specialty metal prices in particular? Do you have a sense that those are stabilizing? That would be one of them. Secondly, you're mentioning that you're trying to position yourself more strongly on the market for used industrial catalysts. I was wondering if you could provide some comments on how complex those streams are and how would they compare in profitability with other high-end streams like e-scrap, for instance. And thirdly, on catalysts, I was wondering if you could comment on whether or not we could extrapolate the trend mix that we've seen in the first quarter, especially with a high performance on the Asian market and in particular in China.
Okay, so let me start with the recycling. I mean, give or take a few millions, and since recycling is a big contributor to earnings, then the number of millions that may be involved there is maybe relatively large. Give or take a few millions, I don't see a major difference between the two semesters today, considering the visibility that we have on supply on one side and the timing of the two shutdowns that will take place in the course of the year. So I wouldn't expect a major discrepancies between H1 and H2 in terms of performance. But of course, one of the unknowns there is the impact of the secondary metal prices. And unfortunately, I cannot tell you whether these have stabilized, bottomed out, will recover, or will decrease any further. I mean, these are typically markets where you have a limited number of players both on the supply and on the demand side, and a limited number of sources of supply and applications or end users. And it is really extremely difficult to predict where the prices could go. So this would be, I mean, besides the impact of metals, which will remain an unknown quantity for a while, I would say considering the other factors where we have more visibility, I would not expect major differences. In terms of industrial catalysts, are they more profitable? I would not provide you a general answer on that. By definition, as we try to optimize our supply mix, we only target materials that are profitable enough to feed our recycling facilities. And market conditions can change fairly rapidly, depending on the number of factors. But for the time being, indeed, we see some attraction in industrial catalysts, and that means by deduction, indeed, that they provide some potentially attractive margins. Then, in terms of the trend regarding the mix of for the catalyst for the AutoCat business. I have no reason today to predict a significant change in the trend. It is likely based on what I see in terms of analysis of the industry trends, it is likely that we will have continued weakness in Europe in the coming months, and that should be compensated by growing demand in Asia, in China in particular, and continued strong demand from North America. But again, I mean, I have to rely, as I mentioned earlier, the visibility that we have based on call-offs is about 2 to 3 months. Beyond that, we have to rely on the forecast of our customers and the projections from industry analysts. So that's a caveat that I wanted to mention.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Peter Olofsson from Kepler. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I had one question left regarding the recycling business. Aurubis in Germany has announced that this summer they will start up a new facility and that they will start treating the tank house slimes from the Olen facility. I understand that your recycling business is still well supplied, but will the loss of this business impact the mix and therefore the results of your recycling business?
Well, as always, I don't think it's appropriate to comment on a specific contractual relationship, so I will not deviate from that sound practice. And as I mentioned, suffice to say that we're well supplied, and that the picture in terms of availability, as we mentioned in the press release, remains very good when it comes to industrial byproducts.
Maybe quick follow-up then. I understand that the profitability of the recycling business relate to a large extent also to the complexity of the materials that you treat. Would you consider these kind of products and these tank house slimes, is that quite complex, or is it relatively easy for you to treat these kind of products?
You're right. The more complexity there is, the more impurities you have in the secondary materials, the better positioned we are and the most competitive we are to treat these materials. And I'm not going to comment whether slimes are the most complex or more complex than other materials to treat. Again, we address a number of segments, and market conditions in terms of availability and prices do change over time, and we move from one segment to the other and continuously optimize the mix based on the market conditions that we see in the different segments. And if my recollection is correct, we have not mentioned in the press release nor in any other comment that we saw a mix deterioration in the recycling activity.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Martin Evans from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a quick one on Japan. Looking longer term, I guess, Mark, in terms of how that economy may or may not benefit you if it responds to the new initiatives and the planned weaker yen. I mean, sort of trying to piece it all together from your perspective within Japan, in terms of your net exposure and how you may or may not benefit. Clearly, I'm assuming that you would see, you know, an improvement or a weakening in the currency, given your operations in Japan, as an opportunity for you rather than as a threat, given the sort of increased difficulty with exports into Japan from Europe. Would that make sense?
Yes, Martin, it does. And indeed, I mean, we decided a few years ago to increase our industrial presence in Japan, in both catalysis and battery materials in particular, and some other applications like platinum-engineered materials. And the past couple of years have have seen some hardship because of the extreme strength of the local currency and the decisions made by some Japanese companies to start moving production out of Japan. So the weakening or the softening of the currency in recent months is providing some relief in that respect and bodes relatively well indeed. Now, this being said, let me also remind you that an industrial presence in Japan is also important because the proximity to the customers is one of the decision factors that comes into play when qualifying for global programs. Let's bear in mind, indeed, that Japanese producers may produce all over the world, but their decisions are being made in Japan. So entertaining a proximity between the technical teams with our customers remains an important success factor.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Edward Donahue from One Investments. Please go ahead.
Good morning. A couple of questions, if I may. It's firstly, with regard to the catalyst division, if you look at the indications from your clients with regard to both volumes, but more importantly, the mix, do you see anything changing with regard to the comments you made on Europe and North America with regard to the vehicle mix and the impact that will be having? That's the first one. The second one is, you know, I get the feeling that there seems to be maybe a greater pushback on pricing across the product groups than maybe you've talked in the past. And is that a correct assumption, or just? And the other one would be to move to the 330 of EBIT. What do you require? Hello?
Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat the second question because I missed that one? I have questions number one.
Oh, sorry. Okay. It was with regard to your comments on pricing. I just get the feeling that, you know, maybe it's a bit logical bearing in mind the economic backdrop, but there seems to be a greater maybe pushback on pricing and a rethink on your part, especially on the comments on sort of your pricing for the technical complexity and the IP that you bring. Is there a greater pushback from clients, either short term or even longer term, with regard to projects?
Okay, thank you. I got that one now. So let me start with the your question about the vehicle mix in Europe and the US. In the short term, I do not expect a major change in the vehicle mix, and we expect continued pressure on diesel engines. And you saw that the diesel engines has decreased in the overall mix by some two percentage points compared to a year ago, and there may be a further slight decrease. In the next few months. And in a way, in the long term, it remains to be seen how the mix is going to develop, because I continue to be convinced that you need to have a healthy proportion of diesel in the vehicle mix in Europe in order to meet the upcoming CO2 regulations. So somehow the OEMs are going to probably push diesel engines back up in the medium to longer term. One of the interesting pieces of information that I got from my latest visit to customers and to my teams in the U.S. is that there seems to be some renewed interest for diesel engines in North America, in the U.S. in particular, that is driven by the successful introduction of European diesel models in the lineups in North America. And for some of them, talking about the imported models, the waiting lists are getting pretty long. So there is renewed interest because, indeed, there is increased awareness on the capability of diesel in terms of mileage per gallon, and the fact indeed that diesel is getting increasingly accepted as a solution that meets the requirements of the U.S. Drivers, especially those that need a lot of torque, for instance, for towing, so summing towing boats, etc. Diesel has all the characteristics that type of applications. This being said, I don't want to create undue expectations. Diesel penetration in America remains small, and as the demand grows, it is growth that is coming from a very small base. But I think it's a positive development that was worth mentioning. But again, in the short term, I would not expect a major further change in the vehicle mix. Sorry, let me add that there is also increased interest and demand in North America for the four-cylinder applications for which Umicore is well-positioned. In terms of prices, yes, obviously, I do expect customers to push back. I mean, our customers are also under pressure to deliver to their own customers, to deliver savings and cost-competitive products to their own customers, so there is also pressure. But again, we need to make a distinction between our margin and the value that we offer to the customer. Let's bear in mind that if you look at our turnover, 3/4 or 80% of our turnover is the metal value that is contained in our products, and about 1/5 of our turnover is the added value. So there is more to be gained by the customers if we can continue to successfully develop new materials that reduce the metal content and the metal cost to them, than by squeezing our own margins. Because at the end of the day, the more we squeeze, we get squeezed in terms of margins, the less money we have available to develop new materials. So that would be a negative spiral that we don't want to engage into. And that's why we have these discussions with our customers about where the most significant gains can be made. And my view is that the gains ought to be made on the metal content rather than on or value added. Let me then move to your third question. What would it take to reach the upper end of the forecast of the EBIT range? You know, there are, at this point in time, there are a number of moving parts, and I would find it a bit risky to isolate, to single out one of them to say would take to reach the higher end. The range is a realistic range, and as usual, it means that there are reasonable chances to reach any point within the range. Given, again, the number of moving parts, I would prefer not to single out the various elements.
Okay, I mean, I don't want to, you know, sort of put you in a difficult position on that, but does it require, let's put it this way, a better macro backdrop than we're experiencing at the moment, or is more of this going to be helped by self-help?
No, it doesn't, and the forecast is based on what we see or what we know today, and we're not banking on a recovery in the economy before the end of this year.
That's great. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now take our final question today from Rhiannon O'Connor. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I've got a few left, actually, mostly in the recycling division. First of all, I know you wouldn't quantify the effect of the smelter shutdown, but just can we go through timing a little bit? The smelter shutdown this year was in Q1. Was the smelter shutdown last year also in Q1, or was that in Q2? And can you tell me the second half of the smelter shutdown, will that be in Q3 or Q4? And was the no smelter shutdown, just to confirm, there was no smelter shutdown last year in the second half to compare against? That's the first question on timing. The second question, you said you extended some of the hedging given the favorable metal prices in Q1. Can you give us some kind of indication on the length of your hedging period? You said last year that you were like hedged for 2 years out. Is that still true, or do we now have a shorter period in which you're hedged? The third question is on performance materials and the construction exposure. Last year you said you were pretty much bumping along the bottom in that division, but obviously there's been quite a poor performance in this quarter. Is that mainly weather related, or is there a structural worsening of Umicore's business exposed to construction? Thank you.
Hi, Rianne. So let me start with recycling. So the timing of the shutdowns, there was no shutdown in the second half of last year. So that's the only simple answer I can provide you at this point in time. The timing of the shutdowns this year, I don't want to go into too much details. And in some cases, it may overlap between two quarters, depending exactly on when we decide to shut down. So I don't want to go too much into the details there. But there was no shutdown in the second part of last year. In terms of hedging, we're still trying to cover 18 to 24 months of exposure, considering the contracts that we have and the liquidity of the forward markets. So that remains fully applicable and unchanged compared to what I said in the past and how we have worked in the market in the past. Then talking about the construction activity, it's a combination of factors, I would say. One is the weather conditions that have been unfavorable in the first quarter of this year, with a protracted, I would say, stoppage in of the construction activity due to the bad weather conditions in a number of countries in Western Europe, where our largest markets are. This being said, the reality is that market conditions and demand have further deteriorated compared to last year. Last year, we had a significant downturn in the southern European countries, given the hardship, the economic hardship in these economies, and we now see the downturn affecting some of our mainstream markets in Western Europe too. But it's a combination of both.
Thank you. That was very, very clear.
Okay. So at this stage, I would like to wrap up and again confirm that the statements that were made earlier. So the forecast that we are making incorporates all of the elements that we see today and is not banking on an economic recovery in the course of this year, simply because we do not see signs that there would be an economic recovery taking shape still in the course of 2013. And the reality is that Umicore is to a large extent exposed to the European market. Europe accounts for about half of our sales. And while we manage to compensate in volume terms the effects of the European downturn by the growth in the other regions, in terms of mix and margins, the effects are somewhat different because Europe is a premium market typically, and the volumes that are lost here cannot, in terms of margin, easily or fully be compensated by volumes gained elsewhere. At the same time, we see our businesses continuing to generate healthy and significantly positive cash flows, and that enables us to maintain our long-term growth programs, to maintain both the research efforts and the growth capex that should enable us to position the company extremely well to capture future growth opportunities, in particular in catalysis, in battery materials, and in recycling activities. At the same time, though, As I mentioned during the call, we will continue to try and strike the best possible balance between these long-term efforts and ambitions and the means that are dedicated to achieve these ambitions, and on the other hand, the need to achieve short-term profitability, which, given the current economic headwinds, will require further focus on cost reductions and pricing. Thank you for your attention, and as usual, if you have follow-on questions, which I have no doubt you will have, please feel free to get in touch with our investor relations team. They will be available throughout the day and in the coming days to address your questions. Thank you, and bye-bye.